One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are on a Wednesday. One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as we inch closer and closer to the 2024 NFL Draft. And first and foremost, birthday wishes to my broadcast partner, Steve Tasker. Happy, happy.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for the well wishes on social media and all that. That's been very nice.
It's yes.
Very nice.
So, how is he celebrating? He celebrated with a show and a burrito.
That's right.
Basically where he lives.
Nice gift from my broadcast crew. I walked in today, and most of you know who watch the show. I have readers that I use constantly. They're on, they're off, they're on, they're off. It's very distracting for some viewers and listeners, and the listeners especially, right?
Because they hear about that.
They can hear me taking them on. No, I'm just saying. So I use readers all the time, and so I get in to sit down at my desk today, and there were 48 pairs of reading glasses still in the packages, dumped unceremoniously on my desk.
Now the reason we purchased these for Steve as a birthday gift is because in his own possession he has, in various locations, 6 pair of cheater glasses. The reason being, he can't remember where he put the last one that he wore. So he'll have 1 or 2 here in the studio. He's got 1 in his car. He's got 1 at home. He's got 2 at his desk in his office. And invariably, 2 will disappear, and he'll start walking around searching for them. So we figured to remedy that situation, we would get him 48 pair.
They got like Harry Carey cheater glasses. Yeah. They're like huge black goggles. So if you'll know that when I start cutting into that supply that I've gotten down to it, the show won't go on unless I do have at least 1 pair right here.
I will tell you that there's probably 3 or 4 times over the course of a calendar year where he can't find any one of the 6 working pair that he has, and he's got to run to the pharmacy or the drugstore and go get another pair.
I have a couple of go-to spots around the stadium that I go to, and I just grab a pair.
So this will remedy that. He will no longer have to run out, at least for the next 4 or 5 years. He'll be set with plenty of reader
set to retirement glasses. From the glasses that I've got now.
So, yeah, that was a little bit of a gag gift, obviously, but we had fun with that, and Steve was a good sport about it, as he usually is. We got to go around the NFL here. There's some league news concerning some of their showcase games at the start of the 2024 season. And around the NFL, presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. But it was announced today that the opponent for the Philadelphia Eagles, who were already announced as one of the teams in the Friday night weekend kickoff Brazil game, will be playing the Green Bay Packers in week 1. So they'll have the season kickoff game week 1, which I know you and I believe is going to be Chiefs-Ravens in Kansas City, a rematch of the AFC title game. They do play each other this year, and it is in Kansas City. So that's just tailor-made for the kickoff game Thursday night. Yep. The Brazil game Friday night will be an all-NFC affair, Green Bay, Philadelphia. And as I'm saying that, it even convinces me further that the AFC title game from last year will be the kickoff game. That's just my educated guess. I don't know anything, but it's too obvious to not be that game.
Yeah,
Lamar, Patrick Mahomes.
We always go through it. I mean, it's that time of year. We're starting to kind of come out in May. The schedule, mid-May or is it late May? I'm not sure.
It's like usually a little over a week into May.
Right. So we start speculating, and a lot of times we're getting some stuff right.
Well, and they do some of those trickle-out announcements, you know, in the weeks leading up, too.
Sometimes
a week before the draft they have a couple, and then the week after the draft they have a couple.
I don't think the Bills will be on like 9 times like they in prime time and 4:30 games like they were last year. I think there's too many – there's too much hesitancy on how good they're going to be, even though Josh is must-watch, is appointment viewing.
Yeah.
And I think the Bills
will
remain that.
Maybe not quite as many primetime games as each of the last
two. I don't think they'll start out on all those primetime games. They probably get flexed to them later in the year as they win. Because they're going to win games. I mean, good grief. So I think that's kind of the trend that's going to take over. I think like Baltimore will step into that. Cincinnati will be back into that because of Joe Burrow and his health and Lamar. There'll be some other guys that can take that because Josh was standing there by himself last year.
Well, and Houston's going to step into a few too with Stroud.
And you know, and the reason Houston's a big thing, not it's C.J. Stroud, but it's also the fact they're a playoff team. And don't forget, Houston's the third largest television market in the country. So there's that.
That helps.
There's that. So yeah, that's what that'll help.
So that is the Brazil game, Packers Eagles Friday night, Week One. Some money got thrown around yesterday. Another player who was franchise tagged back in February got paid on a long-term deal. We've seen others that have gotten long-term deals here that were franchised. Kyle Duggar just earlier this week got that four-year $68 million deal after getting franchised. And now Jaguars pass rusher Josh Allen signs a five-year $150 million deal, 88 of which is guaranteed. And 88. Just watching him in that Week 5 game against the Bills, I mean, he's been a menace for years now.
If you want to, if you're a parent of a youngster or expecting a youngster and haven't named him yet, your retirement plan should be naming him Josh Allen, because everybody who shows up in the league named Josh Allen is
making
killing
buku
it.
Bucks.
Yeah, he is a really good player, a really good player. And I'll say this, you can't pay him any more bigger compliment than this. He's as good a defensive end as Josh is a quarterback. That guy can go. And he has wreaked havoc on the Bills every time they play. That's one team that the Bills have struggled with consistently.
He gives them fits.
He gives them problems. And yeah. Congratulations,
I mean,
to him.
The Bills aren't the only team he gives problems to. He gives
right.
Problems.
It's, yeah. So it's good for him. Jacksonville solidifying its future. They got a foundational piece in place now. What they really need is for Trevor Lawrence to fulfill his potential. I think the changeover to Doug Peterson.
It was good the first year.
Yeah, they did.
But then the second year, he took a slide.
Something's up. I don't know what it is, but we'll see.
He did not play well last year. Or at least up to the standards he had set the previous year. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he can have a bounce back season for Jacksonville, because that division suddenly got a whole lot harder with the emergence of Houston last year, who ended up beating them out for the division. And we'll have to wait and see what Anthony Richardson does when he gets back to full health as Indianapolis's starting quarterback. So, yeah, it's – and Tennessee with Will Levis. I mean, you got a lot of young quarterbacks in that division. It's an exciting one for the future, for sure.
Will, I like Will Levis a lot. I think his high end is up there. He's a big, physical, strong-arm dude like Josh. Like all quarterbacks like that, like John Elway, like Cam Newton, like, you know, Randall Cunningham. You go back across the years, the guys like that, he's one of those. Obviously, what he's got to do is get from the neck up a little better, but think about it. We thought it was bad last year when Russ Wilson came in. We didn't know he was going to flop like he did. But now you got Will Levis and C.J. Stroud that are going to be part of the conference.
Yeah.
You go down the list.
Oh, you don't have to tell me.
Dude, this is –
It's stacked.
Yeah, it is stacked. You can think of it as Lamar, Josh, Patrick, C.J. Stroud, Deshaun Watson, who – I don't know. I don't know if he'll ever get it back together, but you kind of got to throw him in that conversation, right, for his past performance.
Maybe.
Tua. Now you've got.
Tua led the league in passing last year.
Right. Joe Burrow, of course. Trevor Lawrence.
Justin Herbert.
Anthony Richardson. Justin Herbert.
Patrick.
And you got. Oh, and Aaron Rodgers, by the way, is in that conference, too. You know, think about it. It's a gauntlet.
Yep.
It's a gauntlet, and it's gotten younger and maybe better.
Might be better. I don't think that's
outlandish
to say.
Justin Fields is now in Pittsburgh with Russ.
Yep. He'll be playing by week 6.
Right. Week 6 of the preseason opening day. What do you think?
What?
Do they
Pittsburgh?
Because they ain't got anything invested in Russ.
No, they also don't have anything really invested in Fields. He's on the last year of his
right,
rookie
which
deal.
Means it should be the finger quotes meritocracy. Who plays better? Who do you think?
I mean, Tomlin has come out and said that Wilson is the starter. He has said that publicly. Now, obviously,
that
is subject to change.
Well, yeah,
based on performance. You know, if he stinks up the first two games, have a seat here next to me.
Let me open my eyes wide and look at you, and say. if he stinks up the first OTA.
Oh, you think it's going to be that short a leash?
Okay. Yeah. Mike, listen, I love Mike Tomlin. There's nobody out there I respect as more than Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
He's the dude. He is Mr. No Nonsense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you don't have to tell me that, but yeah.
So I'm thinking the millisecond after Justin Fields outperforms Russ Wilson, that decision is like a light switch.
Yeah. And you got to believe that that's going to happen because they got to find out about Fields more than they need to know about Wilson. If you know, because what are you doing next year? You're going to extend him?
All that's in the mix.
You know that whole thing.
All that's in the mix. One thing you could do if you're Tomlin the Steeler, say, listen, hang out here. We're going to give you some. We're sprinkling in at the end of the season. He finally does get in. They kind of make that run like the Steelers always do. They got to get in. Mike Tomlin notoriously has never had a losing season. He'll get him that, maybe even get him to 10 wins with Fields finally taking over in the last month and a half, right? Then you think, okay, well, now you can, we'll keep you. Is this the last year of his deal? He's got another year.
This is the fourth year.
He's got another year. So we're gonna exercise the contract.
Well, you have to kick in his fifth year option sight unseen on a field with a Steelers uniform on. So you're gonna.
This is the fifth year?
No, but you have to make the decision by May 3rd.
This May 3rd. So it is.
He's going to have a fifth year. I don't think they're doing that.
Dude, I don't think they would either.
So now you got to play him and find out what you got. How are you working that?
Here's the thing, though. You don't really have to play him because if you turn out and he doesn't really want to play, you just go with Russ and you kick them both to the curb again because you got nothing in him.
I know, but you could potentially have a franchise caliber player, and you don't know if you do.
Well,
in terms of what you want to execute, I don't know. Maybe the 3 years of film is enough for them to say, yeah, he could be a guy, or no, he's just a backup for now.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, if you're the Steelers coaching staff, you got to have that guy in the building now looking at him. Right? You got to have him running through drills. If you got to make that decision by May 3rd, you got to know.
I don't know
if it, maybe listen. They
I don't
got
think
no.
They can do it.
They've
right
got nothing invested in the position. So if they do guarantee the guy $23 million, which is what in the range $22 to $27 million, you still don't have anything. And I don't want to say like $27 million is not nothing.
Yeah,
but it's not at that position.
Yeah, that's going to be a training camp and a preseason team to keep an eye on.
The more I talk about it, the more they're absolutely going to give him his option year.
Why, to buy themselves time?
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, $27 million. That's fine. It's a quarterback position. That's nothing for that spot. That gives them room. That's still a rookie contract.
I just don't know how you justify that when you won't put him on the field this year over a 36-year-old Russell Wilson. You're gonna pay that guy $27 million next year. I understand when he's probably got a better chance to start because, as far as I'm concerned, Russ is one and done here this year with Pittsburgh.
Sure, but the difference is you're going to be seeing the guy. And, in fact, maybe you protect him. Maybe say, Russ, go out there and stink for a year, and then we're going to move our guy in. So that when and let's find out what he needs to be successful. We'll do it as much as we can, but then we'll draft a couple offensive linemen, we'll bring in a weapon, and then we'll let this kid have some success.
It'll
and just use Russ Wilson as a stopgap, sacrificial lamb, behind a bad offensive line and not enough weapons, whatever reason you want to give, and then move on with a young guy.
Yeah. Draft news, ESPN's Adam Schefter is reporting that the Cowboys are a sleeper in the quarterback draft market as they try to reach a new contract agreement with Dak Prescott. How wild would that be if they throw Dak overboard to some team looking for a quarterback and draft one? Let's not forget Trey Lance is on their roster, former third overall pick of the Niners. So
Dallas is 24.
Do they start the Trey Lance experiment and draft a quarterback and have a outright competition between Lance and whoever they draft? And, because the thought is they could trade Dak and get a one.
There's some analytics categories, and you know how they slice these quarterbacks 20 different ways. Some of those slices put Dak Prescott as an elite guy, and is that on certain down and distances, certain route whatever. Dak turns out pretty good in some of those analytics. But to the untrained eye, he's just a guy.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of
playoff performances have been lacking. I mean,
he can't elevate.
2 years ago, he did well in that first playoff game, and then he threw three picks in the next one. And then this year, they lose at home to Green Bay.
An upstart team. Right, a Green Bay team that was incredibly young.
So, I don't know, maybe Jerry's had enough.
I think, I'm kind of with Jerry on this one.
You know what I mean? On Jerry's team for this one?
I've said it a ton. Listen, you think about the guy. Jerry Jones does a pretty good job evaluating quarterbacks because he pulled Tony Romo in, who was just a guy, and all of a sudden he's one of the great regular season quarterbacks ever.
It went a long time with him with playoff utility.
Right, and it's the same thing with Dak. So they get a guy that's pretty good, you know, that way. But if they ever got a chance to get a guy with some elite traits and pass the evaluation they have on guys like Romo and Dak, they'll do it then. But I'll say this too, and I say it all the time. Jerry Jones can pick horses because their roster is always good, really good. And that's because of Jerry being the GM. He picks guys. Now, he might rely on a few too.
He has deferred some of that power in recent years, but yes.
He is a guy who drafts with one thing in mind, and that's to me, and that's traits. That whole roster is full of physical traits.
It is.
Now,
they need line help now.
The plus and minus of that is obvious sometimes, but
I don't think their picks will be as sexy this year.
Well, they got
But if they're trading their quarterback to get one, that'll be pretty sexy.
Yeah,
I'll tell you that right
they're now. They're at 24 and 56. And then also at 87. 24, 56, and 87. They got just right where they finished. No compensatories, no nothing up until that. And then they go at they do not have a fourth rounder. They don't have a fourth
rounder.
Interesting
to see what the compensation would be for Dak.
They also do not.
Because that new team would have to do a contract with him, too.
They've got they go all the way to 174 before they have another pick.
Woo! A little bit of a layoff.
So they got from 87 to 144 before they pick again.
Speaking of the draft, Steve, Mel Kiper has released his latest two-round mock draft. And this might surprise some people. But he has Brian Thomas Jr. sliding all the way down the board to the Bills at 28. The Bills don't even have to move from 28 in Mel Kiper's brain.
That ain't happening.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
That is
but he's got
happening.
Brian Thomas to the Bills. He says, in this scenario, a talented wideout could fall into the Bills' lap. Thomas was an incredible vertical threat for Jaden Daniels last season, leading the country in touchdown catches with 17, 10 of which came on go routes or fades. He ran a stellar 4.33 40 at the combine. Could be a legit number one wide receiver, which quarterback Josh Allen now needs. In case you're wondering, in the second round at pick 60, he has the Bills taking a safety out of Utah, Cole Bishop, with the 60th pick. And his reasoning for that pick is as follows. The Bills moved on from veteran safety duo Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer this offseason, and they have long-term questions at the position. Bishop has some versatility. He even played some off-ball linebacker for the Utes, and he's a great blitzer. 7.5 career sacks, 25 pressures over the past two seasons. One of the best marks in FBS for a defensive back. I'll say this. He's my – on my humble rankings board, I have him as my fifth safety in this year's class. The reason why is he did a lot of what we saw Taylor Rapp do for the Utes defense last year, really up at the line of scrimmage a good deal. They play like a 50 front, so they play like a 5-2, and he played this star safety position, which was right. Like a hybrid linebacker. So he's up at the line of scrimmage. He's blowing up screens, and he was used as a run blitzer and a pass blitzer. I mean, 21.5 tackles for loss in his career as a three-year starter. I mean, that just shows you how much he's up by the line of scrimmage. I don't know if he's a deep half safety guy. Not that many teams play single safety high much anymore. It's all split safety. That's the new soup du jour in the back.
Right.
He could probably do that, but I don't think he's a true free safety. I think he's not an interchangeable one that can do everything, and I think that's going to push him down the board. He should be there at 60 for the Bills. I think he might be there even later if the Bills don't take him.
Right. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't have a problem with him taking a safety at pick 60. Makes some sense. And this, you can see him kind of plugging into where Poyer was up in there making tackles all the time. It's kind of that type of player. He would be on. He'd be like Taylor Rapp. But I like the fact that he comes in and he rushes the passer well, is a good blitzer and all that, and the physicality doesn't scare him, you know.
Yeah, 6'2", 206. I think he ran better than people expected. He clocked a 4.45 at the combine, including a 1.53 10-yard split. Short arms, you know, only 29 3/4.
Well, I got to tell you though, the thing that stands out about this mock draft is the fact that you get Brian Thomas at 28.
Yeah, which neither of us really see coming to fruition. I mean,
it could happen.
If that happens.
Happy day.
I'll be running laps around the facility here.
Brownie would
like
have
celebrating
called it
with a flag.
Months in advance, Brownie would have called it. But it looked more likely early in the process than it does now. Because now there are other football people other than my co-host here who see Brian Thomas as something special. So now the cat's out of the bag. But I will give Brownie he was the first guy to ever say the words Brian Thomas Jr. to me. So,
well, I'll I think I had a good
credit.
Chance of that happening since you see me every day. So,
right,
I had a good shot of being the first.
He's been on the whiteboard for quite some time.
Yes, he's on my whiteboard. I have some alternatives as well, but
yes,
he is at the top in the largest.
I don't
letters.
Know if we want to. I don't want to talk about it really a whole lot because it. You know, I don't want to make it happen. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I do want it to happen, but you know.
Right.
I don't want to jinx it.
Coming up in the second hour of the show, we'll catch up with our good friend from NFL Network, analytics expert Cynthia Freeland will join us. She's got best fits for NFL teams. She'll give us her best fit for the Bills. And we'll also chat with her about the merits of trading up or trading down for the Bills. And I think you might be surprised about the options that could be there for Buffalo. If the board doesn't fall the way they anticipate, can't get up, what are the merits to moving back? We'll discuss that with Cynthia as well in the second hour of the program. Topic of discussion for you today, if the Bills do not select a receiver in round one, what would satisfy you in the draft? So maybe you've got it buried in your cerebral cortex that the Bills are taking a receiver in round one and then it doesn't happen. What else has to happen the rest of the draft for you to be satisfied with the Bills haul come Saturday night? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the numbers to get on board. We've got open lines for you, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet as always at @OneBillsLive. But let's jump on the phone lines here where we've got some people waiting, and we go to Brandon out in Indianapolis. What do you got for us, Brandon?
Chris, Steve, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
If I could, just real fast. Being a Bills fan in Indianapolis, where I actually grew up, and I was born in 83, and I just wanted to say that what gravitated me towards the Bills was, you know, those days when Steve was on the team, but just the fan base, and, you know, it really is something that people don't understand, even in Indianapolis when I try to explain it to them. So anyways, it's a pleasure to be on talking to you guys. I think they really need to get depth at linebacker. And you know, they're so good at drafting linebackers. But I think, and I'm not saying they have to do it early, and you guys probably know more about depth at linebacker, but I think that would be probably where Brandon Bean is eyeing somebody in the fourth round. And probably in the early rounds, if you can solidify the defensive line. But God, I sure like Leggett. I want that physical receiver with upside. So anyways, those are my thoughts. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks for the call, Brandon.
Yep.
You're in Steve's camp. Steve prefers the big, physical, hulking, massive receiver like Xavier Leggett.
Yeah.
And there we will say this. There is a wide range of opinion on Xavier Leggett. Some people Think he's a one-year wonder, very raw, and will need time to develop and shouldn't be taken on day one. He's a day two pick all day, every day.
He needs more experience, yeah.
And then there are other people that say, oh, he's just scratching the surface. The ceiling is unlimited, and he is a big physical player who can still run away from people. He is unique. Got to have him. He'll make plays on his own. You don't have to scheme him open. Take him.
Yeah, the easy thing is that, hey, this is a Deebo Samuels that's better than Deebo Samuels kind of thing, right? I don't know that that's accurate, but it's that kind of thought process. A big, physical, very versatile athlete where you can line him up everywhere, you can hand him the ball and all that stuff. So I'm with you. I like big, strong dudes.
Yeah. You mentioned linebacker, and that interests me as well. I believe they do need to get some depth there because the only linebackers – from last year's squad that are still on the roster, Milano Bernard, and then you have last year's third-round choice, Dorian Williams, and Baylen Spector. So Tyrell Dotson left. He went to Seattle. He's going to play for Leslie Frazier again up there. And we know A.J. Klein is probably back on his retirement couch. So and Tyler Matakevich, free agent, not signed. So, yeah, you're devoid of some depth there. And – it would make a lot of sense. The question is, absent a third-round pick as of now, do the Bills address that linebacker need early or late, meaning round two or round four? I think if the right value's there in round two, it's certainly a possibility. I love the Edgerrin Cooper kid out of Texas A&M, who's widely expected to be a day two pick. Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from NC State, is a freaking tackle machine. He's ridiculous, and he's got a little edge to him, too. He'll let you know how good he is on the field when he buries you. So those two guys are my favorite linebackers in the entire class because I think there's a sharp drop-off after that. I mean, there are some other guys you can get from a depth perspective and develop them. The Tyron Hopper kid from Missouri is pretty good. He'll go a little bit later. He's, you know, a fourth-round kid. So, you know, that's a guy that they could consider with one of their two fourth round choices, but yeah, they do need depth at that position. I don't think there's any debate about that.
Yeah. And also, yeah, Edgerrin, they'll have a chance to draft Edgerrin Cooper, but they probably won't because they'll have other needs, like particularly at 28, 60, depending on what happens at 28, you can talk me into that, particularly for a kid as good as Edgerrin Cooper seems to be. Or any of the others, Chris Braswell, Dallas Turner. You know, there's a bunch of guys in this class that are really good. It seems to me that it is not, and we talk about it all the time, it's not corner, it's not quarterback, it's not edge rusher, it's not left tackle. It's a, you know, it's an inside linebacker in a league that doesn't run it so much anymore.
And you're not taking a depth guy in round two.
Right.
You're taking a depth guy in round four. That's or five.
And they don't need a, they don't need anything but a depth guy. The guys they have at the top of the rotation are really, really good. So they'll wait. They'll wait.
Right. Let's get back to the phones. And who do we got up here next? Who's been waiting the longest? Looks like Dave and Clarence. What's up, Dave?
Hey, guys. Steve, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm with you on the readers, man. I have to have them all around, too, so don't feel bad. Listen, guys, I want you to help me out. I want to bring closure to this a Diggs trade, okay? I have no problem with the trade, but here's my thought. If going into the draft, why would we not offer Diggs plus eat his $31 million dead cap money, and maybe a 5 and 6 to move up in the draft. That has been bothering me for the last few days because regarding your question of the day, I'm sorry, I don't see any other move other than a wide receiver. So what do you think is the reason behind? Now, I don't expect you guys to know with specificity
right
what Brandon was thinking, but it just seems to me that would be a very attractive offer out there for somebody. Diggs eating the dead cap money and maybe a 5 and a 6. What do you think?
Well, the Bills are going to eat that money no matter what. But I get what you're saying. Alfred Diggs plus, finger quotes, plus whatever.
Day three picks.
With a team now to trade up in the draft and involve these draft picks. Well, as you know, they did involve some of the draft picks in this draft. The Bills got a two next year from Houston.
Yep.
And they gave up a couple of picks as well.
Five and a six.
Plus they're eating the cap. So, yeah, yes. Dave, there's just no way to get it done. Nobody's going to make that deal.
Here's
good as it sounds for Buffalo is as bad as it sounds for somebody else.
The crux of the issue is this. We've seen veteran receivers, or at least proven NFL receivers, get traded during the draft. Yes, it has happened. But who has it largely been? It's largely been receivers still on their first contract. A.J. Brown, for example, gets traded from Tennessee to Philadelphia. Then he gets his big money contract with his new club. So in terms of the cap money moving around or being inherited, it's minimal. I think it's far more palatable to trade a receiver on his first contract than it is a receiver on his third contract, which is the situation with Stephon Diggs. Not only that, at this point in the game, a lot of people have used their available cap space and can't take on a salary like Diggs, which, granted, was only $18.85 in base salary guaranteed, but it was guaranteed nonetheless. And so you inherit that. Can you fit that under your cap? You're wiping out half the league right off the bat just in terms of cap parameters to work with.
Right.
So to take the chance and go into the draft and hope you can find a suitable trade partner on draft night, if you can't come up with a suitor for that, now where are you? You can't take that level of risk go on draft night. You have to preemptively address that, you know, whether Diggs asked for a trade or whatever it was, that has to be preemptively handled before you get to the draft, because now you're going into the draft saying, I hope we can move him, and if we do, then we'll do A, B, and C. But what if you can't move him?
Yeah.
Now you have to flip back to whatever other contingency plan you had.
So it's like this. I mean, first of all, like Brownie said,
it's too big a rock to push up the hill.
Yes. First of all, the league, there's 31 other teams, cut down to like 10 who could actually fit $18 million under their cap. And then of those 10, who want to move out of a spot where they may get a guy better than Diggs cheaper?
Yeah.
Then that narrows that field a little further. So now you're looking with like five teams. Now those five teams, you're thinking, okay, well, you don't want to do it with the Chiefs. You don't want to do it with San LA, whatever. They're teams you wouldn't do it with. So that narrows it down. So you're down to like one team, and that's where it is. So there are so many obstacles to overcome because of the atmosphere in the marketplace. Like Brownie said, you're asking teams to give up way more than the Bills were able to get for him from the Houston Texans, and they're just not going to do it. As good as you think that sounds for the Bills and how much better it would be for the Bills to get that and move up like that.
Yeah, the feasibility just
the other team's going, why would I do that?
Yeah.
You know, they say no. So there's so many things in that suit.
And they found a team in Houston willing to take Diggs off their hands. But they weren't even going to give him a pick to use this year, because Houston doesn't have a one anymore. They didn't want to give up a three or one of their two twos for Diggs this year, so they gave him a two next year. And, you know, that's what Brandon Bean ended up taking. We have to take a break, but we're wide open for your phone calls. So if you're holding at 803-0550, stay where you are. We'll get to you when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, here we are on One Bills Live on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. If the Bills do not select a receiver in round one, what would satisfy you in the Bills draft? 803-0550, the number to get on board. Got an open line for you there. But we head back to the phones, and Bob in Stockton leads us off. What do you got for us, Bob?
Hey, guys. I agree with what Steve has been saying, that our offense has got lots of weapons. I really hope that we don't take a receiver in the first round. You look at last year, the tail end of the season, when Diggs' production went down, Cook, Shakir, Kincaid all picked up their production. I think we take a receiver in the second round. With our O-line and Josh Allen, I think we can make a second-round receiver look like a first-rounder. I think we should take the defensive help. I mean, we've only got Ed and Daquan that came back on the line. I'd like to see him take a defensive lineman and maybe even a edge rusher because we don't know what Vaughn's status is going to be. And there's, of course, always safety, but I think we need defensive help in the first round.
Yeah, I'll say this, I'm kind of with you, Bob. I like the guys in the room now, and even particularly with Sanders in there, Samuel in there.
Curtis Samuel, yeah.
I like Samuel in there with the guys they've got. Certainly the guys behind him, I don't know about Terrell Shavers, I don't know about the rest of them, but I think they've got guys that can play, and certainly the proving Kincaid, Shakir, Cook, all of those guys are, and Samuel. I get it. It would be great to have one of those big time wideouts to give to Josh and have this offense.
We're in an arms race.
Yes, exactly. But I think we've got.
Have you not forgotten?
I think we've got better weapons. Then I think we're giving ourselves credit for.
Maybe.
KJ Hamler's on the roster.
Yeah.
Andy Isabella's still on the roster. I get it, and I get caught up in it too. And without Diggs, you think, wow, this. But you're right. They went 7-1 down the stretch last year with Diggs not helping that much. And while he does garner some attention taken away from those guys,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm not as sold on that as maybe others are. So I'm with you. I don't know that there's a gaping hole like we're making it out to be.
Not on defensive line. I mean, they very quietly have filled in some holes in free agency.
Yeah.
You know, after getting Daquan and A.J. Epinesa back, they also signed Austin Johnson, the defensive tackle from the Chargers. They then signed Deshaun Williams, another defensive tackle, I believe, what was it, Carolina last year?
Mm-hmm.
And then they signed the defensive end from Washington, Casey Tuhill, who's kind of a rich man's Trent Murphy type.
I'll say this, though.
So they filled the holes depth-wise.
I'm kind of still, and I don't want to be sacrilegious here, but I'm kind of still in the best player available mode for this reason. If there's a guy on the board at whatever position, who is a difference maker, you got to take him. Because if he can make a difference, that's going to help this team, no matter where it is. That's kind of where I'm in the camp of. And I don't know whether Brandon Bean is there or not, because everybody's up in arms over the Steph Diggs thing. And, oh, my gosh, I don't know. There's no way you can convince me that Samuel is not going to be better than Gabe Davis in the passing game. He is. And Diggs, that spot was almost vacated in the second half of the year last season, and they were 6-1 down the stretch when they really needed it most, and with one of the toughest stretches of the schedule ever in the league last year at that spot, and they were going 6-1 down the stretch right in the midst of it. We were sitting here before the bye week saying, man, we got to run the table. And they did against
Kansas City,
Dallas, here's where it is.
Chargers.
Yeah, it's
New England.
They ran the table.
Miami.
Kansas City, Dallas, the Chargers, the Patriots,
Miami.
And Philly, and Miami, and they took Philly to overtime on the road in a rainstorm. They were cooking
and
last year
and went to overtime on the kick of the year in the NFL.
That's right,
59 yards in a driving rainstorm.
They were killing it without Steph Diggs being like the finger quotes Steph Diggs. So Bob from Stockton had kind of the courage to take a deep breath and say, well, wait a minute now. The guys we've got are pretty good, and I agree with him.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean I don't want the shiny object on the shelf if they can get it, because I think one of those guys, because it sets him up, and I think most of it, let's face it, most of what we're talking about here sets him up for the future, right? I mean, you got this guy, you got a Rome Odunze for 12 years, right? I mean, that guy's going to, it's that kind of trajectory. Then we don't have to worry about it. That's fine for then, but for now, that need isn't as great as I think we're all kind of making it out to be because of the Steph Diggs trade. I see what Bob from Stockton is saying. I'm still on the wide receiver train if they're going to go for a need, but I don't think it's as pronounced as all we're all making it out to be, and I'm still of the mind that if you're going to be sound and true to yourself, you take the best player there who can make the biggest difference for your team at whatever position going forward. Because this team, if you're going to make a difference on this team, you're really doing something. And I think if there's a guy on the board that can do that, take him.
Let's go to David in Buffalo next. What's up, David?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. When the season ended, my first thought was edge rusher. But then I got convinced by the thought that it's an arms race in the NFL. And then once Diggs was traded, then that definitely was they needed to arm up on the offensive side. But then my thoughts were that actually the way to do that might be to go for one of the other trends that I think has come along, the positionless player, and actually to go and trade up to get Bowers, which would be a third tight end, which would seem odd at first. But actually what I think you could do is you would put at least two, maybe even three tight ends out on the field, and then the defense has to make a decision about how they're going to cover them. If they try to put out a bunch of, fast safeties and things, because Kincaid can go out wide, Bowers, the two times Mackey winner, can go all over the field as well, Cox can get all over the place, then you actually bring in the guys to block and you run like Brady wants to. If they bring in big guys because we've got so many tight ends, then you put those guys out wide, and then you run and throw passes. So I'm really interested in seeing the Bills trade up, actually, and get Bowers. So I think you can get, if you go up to 6 or 9, instead of the prohibitive thing of going up to 3 to get a Harrison or something like that,
right,
might be an interesting approach.
Yeah, it would be a different philosophically, no question. And I like where your head's at, where you say you get these guys out there who are 6'5", 230, or 240 as tight ends, or 6'5", 250 if you're Dawson Knox, get these guys, and then they can split out and they can – the problem is they got to win against a corner then, I mean, that's – but if a team – if you can run the ball whenever you want, effectively, whenever you want, even if they know it's coming, and be effective doing it, that's always a magic wand. But it's easy to say, it's hard to do. Three tight ends or not.
Yeah, and quite frankly, Brandon Bean thought outside the box last year. When the receiver class wasn't as strong, the run on receivers happened right in front of him on the board, and he pivoted and took the best pass-catching tight end in the draft in Dalton Kincaid last year. I can't see him going that route again this year, especially in a draft where the receiver class is as strong as it's been in the last decade. So,
right,
to me, it points at receiver for obvious reasons, and I don't think he's going to overthink it.
Now, that thing about positionless football, if you apply that to the receivers – then you're talking about somebody like Xavier Leggett or one of the top three guys like Odunze.
Yeah, I mean, Bowers is a
Neighbors.
Great athlete for the tight end,
yes,
position, a great athlete, but he's a little short. He's 6'3". And, I mean, he runs like a deer, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if he's full-time receiver worthy or positionless, quote-unquote.
Right, or, you're talking about doing something else like one of these other – the kid from Georgia, is it Wilson? Yeah.
Are you Florida State, Johnny Wilson? Is that who you're thinking of?
That's it, Florida State, Johnny Wilson.
Big receiver who's 6'7".
He's 6'7", 250 pounds, and plays wide receiver. So then you think, but I don't know that he can move down and beat and block anybody, even if he is that big. That's kind of what you're talking about, guys who are tweeners or the wrong size at the right position.
I like the outside-the-box thinking. I just think the receiver class is too strong this year to look any other way.
And it may come down to they have to pivot whether they like to or not, want to or not.
Got
to
take a break here. More of your phone calls. John in Hamburg, Ira on a cell. We'll get to you when we return here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. right, here we be on One Bills Live. Question of the day for you. If the Bills do not take a receiver in round one, what would satisfy you in the draft? Maybe it's two receivers later. Maybe it's some other position in round one. But you let us know at 803-0550. Back to the phones we go, and to John in Hamburg. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. I'm going to make this quick. Move down in the draft and take a Derrick Henry running back, collect draft picks, and change the helmet to red because you're not going to a Super Bowl until you do.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
No, that's it. That's all I want to say.
All right. Fair enough, John. I don't know what the helmet has to do with the draft plans, but okay.
Move back.
I don't know what you know that we don't, but listen, red helmet is the magic elixir.
There you go. I will say this, John. Great idea. You're not going to – Derrick Henry is not in this draft. There is not one single human being available in this year's NFL draft.
There will be no first-round running back this
that
year.
That could hold a candle to Derrick Henry and what he's capable of. So you can't do that. So there's no reason to trade back for a player who doesn't exist. Secondly, the red helmet. I don't know. As a guy who wore the red helmet, I loved it. And, I, you know, you can obviously imagine my
nostalgia,
affection for that. But when I'm when I go to the games, and I go to every home game, obviously, and I'm invested as any Bills fan in the away games, and I got to stay here and I do the post game stuff. I love the way the white helmets look. I love the look. I love the white on
plus
white.
The white off of the blue jersey. The white off, helmet to the blue jersey.
Yeah, and the white on white on the road with it, they just pop.
Oh yeah, those stormtrooper looks.
They pop, man. I get it too. I love the red helmets, and there's some looks that they could do with the red helmets that would, you know, do that too. But man, I'm good with the white helmets, man. I think they look great. And I'm a guy who wore the red one. I love that too. And let's face it, dude. If Josh Allen's wearing it, I don't care what it looks like, right? So, you know, there's a little bit of that going on because the team's good. Now, this team could wear brown helmets and they look good, but.
And that's saying something.
Yeah. I'm saying I don't know about the red helmet thing.
There is no running back in this draft that's going to be taken in round one. They had Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs last year. They don't have players like that in this year's draft at the running back position. I think the first one will probably come off the board somewhere in round two. Maybe it's the Robinson kid from Texas who was Bijan Robinson's backup. I've got his name wrong. Now I'm going to forget it. But anyway, the kid from Texas, probably the first running back off the board in round two, probably somewhere in the middle there to late.
Jonathan Brooks.
That's who I was thinking of. Trading down, though,
yeah,
might not be as unrealistic as some might think. So
we'll talk to Cynthia Freeland
next time, and we'll see
how top-heavy the draft is. And, you know, and I'm a big fan of that, and I know this too. It doesn't feel like that because of the Steph Diggs trade, but I feel like this is a roster, even so, that, and even your draft philosophy can't change. You just got to take the best player, I think. I hope they do that, and I hope the guy they get at the top really can just step on the field and let's go. I'm here and play and contribute going forward and be one of those 10-year guys that people grow to love and respect around, you know, Bills Mafia. I don't know what position he's going to play, but if he can make a difference, we won't care.
Let's squeeze Ira on a cell in before the break here. What do you got for us, Ira?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Brownie and Steve. My thing is I hope they pick a receiver. But if they don't, I would go cornerback. And who as a receiver, I'll let you guys discuss it, would be in the Eric Moulds type mold? Thank you for taking my call.
A big physical specimen.
Yeah, it's the top three guys.
Yeah, it's the top three guys. I don't think Brian Thomas would qualify as physical, even though he's tall. He's got more of an angular frame. And then A.D. Mitchell is kind of in that same boat, tall, angular player. So
Eric,
you get to the second round, Leggett is another guy that could be a big physical specimen like Moles was.
Eric Moles is the kind of guy that you realize when you watch him play his whole career, particularly here in Buffalo, as to how important it is for a guy just where he gets picked. Eric Moles was a Hall of Fame caliber player. Absolutely Hall of Fame caliber. Dynamite. From day one, he got drafted to a team in Buffalo at the end of Jim's career. It was after Jim, actually.
Well, no, he played with Jim his last 2 years. He was the 96 draft.
Okay. He got Jim.
96
was Jim's last year.
Yeah.
And so he got 1 year with Jim. And it was an era with Marv Levy as head coach. They didn't play rookies that much. So he got on the field some and played some. And then, of course, the next year he started playing all the time, as he should have. That guy, if Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, or any of these guys have the kind of ability and attitude and smarts and anything that all of that stuff that Eric Moles brought to the table, and they're in the right spot, they're going to the Hall of Fame, because that's what that guy was. That guy was a stud, even amongst a team full of them.
I have seen more than 25 Bills training camps, both as a reporter and working for the team. I have still to this day not seen a single player dominate a training camp the way I saw Eric Moles dominate the 1998 training camp at Fredonia. It is unmatched. I don't know if it'll ever be topped. 3 touchdowns a day, bombs left, bombs right, schooling people, making DBs look silly. It was a man amongst boys, and I have not seen anything close to it since. It is somewhat of a shame that he never really got more than a year with a really good quarterback. Had Bledsoe in 02, put up a monster year, did it with Flutie in 98, once more in 2002, and even with poor quarterbacking on the whole, he still finishes with almost 10,000 yards in his career in an era where the ball wasn't flying all over the yard yet.
Yeah, 9,995 yards the guy's got, and he earned every one of them. Man, that guy was a dude. So good for you, Ira, calling him and pulling that name out. If there's a guy like that in there, get him. Yeah. Trade up to get him.
Break time for us here, but when we come back, our good friend from NFL Network, analytics expert Cynthia Freeland, joins us as we discuss her best fit for the Bills and the merits of trading up or trading down. Is there merit to that? We'll find out next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome back to hour number 2, One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Wednesday, and pleased to be joined now by our good friend from NFL Network, analytics expert, and you also see her on Bills preseason television broadcasts as the sideline reporter with Steve. It's Cynthia Freeland. Cynthia, how is your offseason going?
It's going great. I mean, I do, though, miss hearing you do the touchdown call. So I really would like to hear that. It's been too long. So if you could just give me like a good like touchdown, Bills, please.
I'm not a manufacturer of that. I'm more of the organic kind. But
okay, fine. How about a happy birthday, Steve?
Yeah,
that is acceptable.
Happy birthday, Steve.
That is appropriate
Tasker.
And acceptable.
Perfect. Yes.
There we go.
Listen, Cynthia. So thank you. And they got the balloons too. That's awesome. So we're sitting here. I know, Cynthia, you have a life. Brownie and I do not. We are chewing the draft up all day, every day, and we're trying to get inside the mind of Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, and we've seen that. And at 28, it's always kind of a little bit of a dice roll as to who's going to be on the board. What are your thoughts about the Bills picking 28 and how maybe likely it is that they actually make that pick or a different one?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a different one. Yeah. I think that probably the needs are going to drive. I don't think it's going to be a massive move across the board, but we know they're not afraid to trade up for the guy that they like. So be it an outside receiver or potentially even a defensive piece, if you're looking at kind of how the other teams are netting out, it looks like we're going to get a lot of offensive linemen tackle specifically, which is luckily not a need for the Bills, which means there could be a trade partner that's looking to exploit, like potentially trading back up into the back end of the first half to give you a lot of extra equity. So there's ways where you could go up, down, sideways, all of these different ways and still get the person that they want. And we know that Brandon Bean's not afraid to do that and not afraid to kind of go there and get their specific guy wherever they think he's going to land.
Right.
And we're thinking that if there is a move, when you're picking at 28, you kind of got to wait and see how things fall. This is not some preemptive move, you know, for example, like the Jets did years ago with the Colts when they went from 6-3 and took Darnold. They did that move like a month before the draft. This is very much a wait and see when you're picking at 28 because you got to see to some degree what happens in front of you.
I think the lucky part, though, is many of the needs that the Bills have, like even if you were, let's just say corner, for example, there aren't a ton of super needy corner teams ahead of the Bills. So while I know we're all talking about wide receivers, you do need to kind of look at how some of these other positions play out. This is a deeper wide receiver class too, yet again this year. Maybe other positions aren't quite as deep. I don't actually believe there are as many top tier corners in this draft class as we've seen in a few others recently. So, you know, it's really about navigating like the kind of the trade-off between your opportunity cost of where you'd be picking versus where the next pick would land. So, I mean, I think maybe nationally, at least kind of the narrative is like, oh no, what are they going to do? Stephon Diggs, they must absolutely get a wide receiver. I don't actually think that's true. I believe Brandon when he says that we have a board, we're strong, we feel strong about where we've placed all these different people on this board, and we're going to get the right fit for us.
Yesterday, I was telling Brownie that I think the over-under, I think three positions are going to maybe get almost 20 guys, like wide receiver, five or six or maybe six or seven, offensive tackle, and the other one was quarterback in the first round. I don't know. I said 20 guys, but I don't know if there's 20 names on the list that are going to go in the first round, but that's going to be, I think, those three positions, they may get 15 or 16 of the picks.
So for me, a couple of like turning points and hinge areas here that could really be great for the Bills in terms of how, like if I'm a Bills fan and I'm looking at what other teams to kind of like things to cheer for other teams, like look for the Chargers to trade down. That would be a good indicator that potentially more quarterbacks are going right up at the top. Same thing with the Cardinals. You know, everyone's kind of just slotting the Ohio State corner wide receiver, Marvin Harrison Jr. to them, but they could trade down too, should there be a team that wants to come up to get their quarterback. So JJ McCarthy did himself a lot of favors. I think actually Jim Harbaugh also did JJ McCarthy a lot of favors at the combine by saying how wonderful he is to coach. So I'm looking at that. And if I'm a Bills fan, I want both of those teams to trade down, which means there's going to be more quarterbacks taken, more wide receivers, a little bit higher, but the tackle thing that could really be good for the Bills as well. So you want like these teams ahead of you, like you want Seattle to take some sort of lineman because then that means like there'll be some other positions that like, oh no, now I can go up and get my corner, et cetera. So I'm cheering for some trade movements. Like if I'm a Bills fan right now and I'm looking at what else to do, it's like, I'm saying Chargers, I hope you trade down because that means more quarterbacks, which means a better opportunity for us to get a top tier wide receiver at
right.
20-something, not 28 necessarily.
All right, so speaking of trading down, I want you to try to make the case for the Bills to move back if the value at receiver or whatever else isn't right at 28 for them and they don't see any point in staying there and they haven't made a move up the board. Teams like Carolina and Houston, who each have a pair of second-round picks, seem like trade partners that would make sense, but maybe state the case, if you could, so we don't throw Bills fans into a veritable panic that they're moving back when everybody expects them to move up.
Well, let's look at the case of Carolina specifically. They paid so much money at the guard position, like money, that they still need kind of some help with their left tackle. Their right tackle is pretty like solid with Taylor Moton, but that tackle position could drive people to kind of come up and at 28 be like, I will give you my second round pick and some equity maybe as a later round pick to trade down. So that one specifically, if there is this run on tackles, that could be a really helpful pick for the Bills to trade down, the reason to trade down. And then Houston, I mean, they kind of, it's interesting because they're making some really strong moves this offseason. We've seen them kind of go all in and really leverage the fact that they have this rookie, you know, defensive end and quarterback. People forget about Will Anderson. That's an expensive position that they're not paying for as well. If they're looking at a defensive tackle, for example, this is not a very, again, this year, not a very deep defensive tackle like class. And it's certainly not a great safety class. That could be something that they look at as well. Like the safety, the value at those positions, it's weird. You're seeing the market dictate it for paying veteran safety. So that could be something interesting as well if they have some sort of defensive strategic plan there as well. So I don't think moving down is bad at all. Or you could even look at someone like who wants to, like if the Rams probably do like Brock Bowers, that really fits what they're trying to do. Obviously the Bills don't need a tight end. If you wanted to kind of look in that area, maybe someone's like thinking they could kind of outmaneuver the Rams who never pick in the first round to kind of get up near it. Like if they don't take him, like, oh no, we got to rush and take Brock Bowers. So that could be an area as well where a tight end needy team would look to the Bills because the Bills clearly don't need that position.
And one of the things too is give me a range here as we're looking at this draft. So the Bills are at 28 and you get up into like I'm looking at 22, 23, 24, Philly, Minnesota, Dallas, NFC teams. If say Brian Thomas Jr. somehow, some way is getting close to that, right? How far? I mean, we had scenarios where the Bills could almost get up to Cincinnati and LA at 18, 19 if they do the right stuff. But what's the range of places where the Bills could jump up to realistically if Brian Thomas slips maybe a quarter of a round?
I think that is a very realistic range. So the way that, you know, if you want to like, if you want to go like on, do an internet search for, you know, the Jimmy Johnson trade chart, if you're looking, it actually does still kind of hold. Like every year, everyone's like, no one uses that anymore. And then you go back and you kind of value all the trades. You're like, actually they kind of do. And the way that breaks down is that the first like five picks are a pretty big, you give up a pretty big haul, and then they start to compress. You don't have to give up as much to trade up in these latter portions. You could trade with someone like the Rams. You could trade with someone like the Bengals. Now, will the Bengals do that? I don't know because, you know, Bengals and Bills, like it's more likely to trade with an NFC partner because, you know, the Bengals are like, well, who do they want? Because we play them a lot and blah, 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 blah. You know, we don't want Josh Allen getting any good weapons to play against us. So that could be more of a concern than it's more of the showmanship at that point than it is the, so like look for an NFC partner like the Rams that could be a good one, maybe even the Lions, something like that, where you're getting, you know, you don't have to move up that much, but if Brian Thomas starts to beat up, please go get him. He'd be a great fit.
Right. Because yeah. I know you recently did your best NFL draft fits. Was he your fit for the Bills?
Yeah, because remember, Josh throws the ball really hard. 7 of the last 10 hardest in-game throws last year and 8 of the 10 in the year prior. The fastest, so highest velocity, highest miles per hour in a game throws were all Josh Allen. We know this. You can see it. Like, I don't even want to try to catch a ball from him. I would, like, break my little tiny hands. So, ultimately, you don't want that situation. You got to get a guy who has shown that in-game footage, he's able to catch a zippy ball like that, something with some heat on it. So, Brian, it just lessens the kind of the trajectory of how you adapt to the NFL level. And Brian Thomas Jr. has that. Obviously, you know, there's some guys who Troy Franklin also does project for that. Well, he caught some really, and maybe that's a good pick a little bit later, someone who's available if they were to trade down. But I think you want a big kind of outside presence guy. And for me right now, the best fit would be Brian Thomas Jr. But don't be mad if you get Troy Franklin. That little duck is good too.
Right, and that's the knock on him. He's
not
a skinny,
little, but
he's
I
a
feel
skinny
like
duck.
I'm an old lady now, so I can say that little guy. You know?
Yeah, he's a skinny duck, though, right?
He's a skinny duck, yep.
Yeah, well, okay.
What do you
That's his only knock. The guy weighs 160
well,
pounds.
Well, yeah, he's a rail. You're right. You mentioned how you think the top of the draft could help push some talent down to Buffalo in round one. Where could you see maybe the best depth position-wise on day two, Cynthia?
I think there's going to be – I think this is going to be the sneaky spot where those – you know, I think we all we talk about things like when you think about wide receiver ones. Well, wide receiver twos are actually pretty valuable too. And I think people aren't giving enough credit to – like the Bills – Curtis Samuel is a good pick. Like people think like, oh, no, there's no Stephon Diggs. Like it's going to be everything. No, like at least nationally, that's kind of been some of the narratives people have asked me about. And I'm like, I don't – this is Josh Allen's legacy year for sure. Like, because we'll see what happens without Stephon Diggs there, but I'm not that worried. You have to remember Dalton Kincaid, like he wasn't even healthy for the entire time he's been there with him. So it's kind of one of those, and Dawson Knox, obviously. So I'm curious to see how the slot looks. I mean, Steve, obviously you can tell me what you think about it, but I think that's going to be a value in the second round. I also think a lot of these corners will get pushed down there. Like Cooper DeJean could be there in the second round. And because wow, he had some interesting, you know, anytime there's an injury, it always makes a question mark. And he doesn't have an injury that, you know, obviously is a one that's a long-term concern. It is a concern, but I think that he could fall in the second round and that could be a masterful swoop up for the Bills.
And we always, as always, the quarterbacks kind of dominate the top of the draft, and everybody's got their own word. It's Caleb Williams has been there forever, but it happens every time. The closer they get to the draft, the more people try and talk you out of Caleb Williams, right? I mean, now it's like, I don't know, Drake May's pretty good, or, you know, Jalen, you know, all.
We were all surprised when they took Baker Mayfield one in 2018.
Right. So they all get talked up and down and up and down, and now you're talking about there's going to be four guys go one, two, three, four, all of that stuff. What are your thoughts about the quarterbacks as we get into the white-hot intensity of draft night? Are people going to talk themselves out of this, and who are they going to talk themselves into?
I think, look, this time last year, the narrative on C.J. Stroud was that, like, he didn't do well on some aptitude test. Remember that?
Right.
I think
right.
Everyone's now like, ha, that's ridiculous. But I think the thing we did learn from C.J. Stroud is that surrounding a player – not just on the field with weapons, but on like the how they learn, right? Like you got Gerard Johnson there, former quarterback himself, who was helping him learn the quarterback position. You had Bobby Slowick, who created a system that worked for him. You had a former player as a coach. So to me, the fit really depends on what you're going to surround the team with. And Caleb Williams will be the number. I mean, I can't see it going any other way. Like, this is the strongest I've felt about someone. It just feels like, given all of these weird maneuvers, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's who I think is the best fit, like the guy that's going to be poised for the most success. Sure, the Bears have they did a really good job. Their defense got better and healthier last year. They got Montez Sweat. People forget about that. And then they made all these great offseason moves to really kind of solidify all of these great picks for this quarterback to work with. But they didn't fix their O-line necessarily yet. Like, they haven't addressed that. And to me, that's massive. Like, you need to put a player in a position where they're not under pressure the second most often of any quarterback. And by the way, the first was Bryce Young last year. So it was Bryce Young, then Justin Fields. Like, you still got to fix that. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how many amazing receivers you put out there. He's not going to have time to get the ball to any of them. So it's really about surrounding someone with a bunch. And I like Shane Waldron, who obviously the new OC that came from Seattle. I think that's great. But to me, until you address the line, you still got a lot of questions for any quarterback that comes in, be they Caleb Williams, or I actually think Jaden Daniels is probably the most set up for success early just because he's a good off-platform thrower, which, you know, Josh Allen has helped make a really important part of the modern game. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it all goes. But O-line to me is very important.
Cynthia, thanks as always. We're just 2 weeks away from the draft. We'll keep an eye out for more of your coverage on NFL Network. Thanks as always. We'll catch up with you later in the offseason.
I miss you guys. Buffalo, this is about to be my, like, you know, I love summer in Buffalo, but right. I also like a good spring moment there too when everything's popping up. It's perfect time for a birthday for Tasker, you know?
That's
new
right,
flowers,
yeah.
Birds.
Yeah, give it another month before we show up because we're a little bit up and down right now with the weather. So, yeah.
Thanks,
great. I'll hold off, but, you know, we still got a birthday celebration when I see you next
week. There you go. Thanks.
Thank
all
you.
Right, Cindy.
All right, always good to catch up with Cynthia. And we'll get back to our topic of discussion, but it's interesting that moving back,
in round one shouldn't be outright dismissed.
Right.
I think depending how the board falls and what's left as it gets closer to their pick of 28 and Brandon decides whether to make a move up or not, if a move up is not prudent or he can't find a trade partner, staying put and picking or even sliding back, I think, are options. You know he's still sore about not getting that third-round compensatory. I think by hook or by crook, he wants to get his hands on a third-round pick somehow.
Right.
Yeah, whether he's using his two fours to get up there or whether he's moving back from one to add a third and move back to round two. So he's got two twos and a three rather than just a one and a two.
Yeah, I still think after we talking about it today and taking a deep breath, I'm still on the best player available train. I like wide receiver. I just don't think it's going to work at 28. Now, if 28 changes, you know, that number changes to be smaller or whatever, then okay, I'm fine. But 28 or 60 are going to be a wideout. Or they're going to be traded in to get one. So I'm kind of with you. They're going to come out of this draft with two wideouts, and where they get them is going to say a lot, but about the expectations Bills fans have anyway.
Yeah.
But I still think it's a best player available scenario. I just think how hard are they going to work to make sure that the best player is going to be a wide receiver.
Right. I mean, you're talking about the whole best player thing for the last hour, and I get it. I mean, Brandon Bean has, if there's one thing he has been consistent with, it's drafting players with elite physical traits. Ed Oliver might be the only exception, you know, not being of an elite height or weight for the position that he plays. Everybody else, elite physical traits, without question, in round one. That's kind of what they focus on more than anything else, and you should. I mean, that's where the biggest physical specimens usually come off the board.
That's right.
In round one, and he has not made an exception to that really all that much in his six drafts that he's overseen here for the Bills. Let's crack open the tweet sheet, which is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. If not a wide receiver in round one, what will satisfy you with a Bills draft? Andrew says, I want that center from Oregon, Jackson Powers Johnson. He would make a great addition to that offensive line. Certainly not sexy, but I understand it with the salary cap casualty that Mitch Morse was,
right,
who is now in Jacksonville. Rob on the tweet sheet says, a trade for an established number one wide receiver. Brandon Ayuk is my preference. Now, you're going to have to get a lot more creative if that's the route you choose to travel, because upon trade, you're going to have to find a way to have a contract extension in place for him to sign. So you're cap compliant, number one, and that's going to take a lot of money, and you're going to have to push a lot of it to year two in 2025 to fit him under this year.
Think about it. Yeah, unless you get a deal where – think about this. If the Bills traded for Ayuk – now, Ayuk is
– 26 years old.
26. What's his contract status now? Is he's in his franchise?
He's
or is
got
he
his fifth year option coming up.
You trade for Ayuk, and the only way Ayuk comes in and really balls out for you is because you say, okay, we're not going to sign you to an extension.
Well, they can't fit a $23 million contract under their cap right now. They have to do something.
So –
Have to.
Yeah, okay.
You can't live with it.
Yeah, you're right. See, that's the...
That's the fly in the ointment.
Stinking economics. I was going to say trade for him and then just say, hey, we'll make you a free agent at the end of the year. You can leave. Let's rent him for a year. But you're right. If he's on his $23 million first-round draft tag...
Fifth-round option.
Option year, he gets that money no matter what. It's guaranteed. And that's... Yeah, he ain't going anywhere.
And Brandon's not parting with a first-round pick to have a guy for a year.
He may show up 12 months from now.
It's possible.
You know?
Yeah.
But not this year.
Rob on the William on the tweet sheet says, move up from 60 to something in the 30s and draft one there. McConkey, Leggett, Franklin should still be there.
Yeah. I'll say this, too. This Troy Franklin's, you heard, you know, Cynthia Freeland, the guy's like weighs a leaf of paper.
$176
Yeah. So He's got that issue.
But he's thin like Devontae Smith.
Yeah, and he might get pushed around a little bit. But we tend to make these guys make a freckle into a wart with these problems.
Yeah.
Make every little flaw tends to be magnified, and that's going to magnify itself in his play, and he's going to be like totally ineffective. If you draft one of these guys, they're all going to have their moments in the league. From Leggett to Franklin to McConkey, all these guys are going to be able to give you something.
Well, that's why personnel executives always tell their scouts, tell me what they can do.
That's right.
I don't want to hear about what they can't do.
That's what Joe Brady's doing right now. What can the kid do? What am I going to have? Am I going to be limited in what I can call if he's on the field? That kind of stuff. What can I do to make it so he's going to be successful? That's the offensive coordinator's job. All of these guys are going to be able to play, but are they going to be able to play up to number like some 30-somethings? Are they going to be able to play up to the 33rd or 35th or 38th pick in the draft? Maybe, maybe not. That's a big number. That's a small number in the draft. So 28, at those numbers, the 28th pick through the 39th pick, you got to get a guy that's going to be around for a minute and contribute. And people are going to be like, yeah, okay, got that guy. All of these guys will do it for one play or here, one play there. Who's going to do it every play? Yeah. That's what you don't know. And the further down, the bigger that number gets next to his name on the draft pick, the harder it is to convince yourself he's going to be that guy. I mean, that's what this whole thing is. That's what this whole shooting match is about. Picking a guy that lives up to the 28th pick of the draft. Or the 19th pick of the draft. It's not easy. It's not easy because it's a high bar to clear, and that's why you got to know what it takes to play all 22 positions on your starting defense, starting offense combined, and the guy who can play one of those positions better than anybody else can play the position they're at. If he's on your board, that's who you take. Unfortunately, you might have six of them already.
And then if you have another position with comparable value, you go that way. Break time for us here, but if you are holding at 803-0550, stay where you are. We'll lead off with John north of the border in Canada when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. If the Bills do not take a receiver in round one, what would satisfy you for the Bills draft? 803-0550, open lines for you. Back to the phones we go, and to John in Canada, as promised. What's up, John?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was just thinking about something. I love the fact that Brandon Bean thinks outside the box, and we're surprised by a lot of his moves. And one thing that I keep on hearing is Brandon Ayuk and T. Higgins. But I was looking at teams that maybe he's looking elsewhere. And what do you think about DK Metcalf? 26 years of age, $13 million next year, last year of his contract, 6'4", 235. There's your wide receiver one. And then it gives you some flexibility about looking at 28, maybe being a defensive tackle instead of a wide receiver. I think it'd be a good fit for Josh, and he's a big, big guy. And the cold Buffalo weather, people don't want to tackle a guy that size. So what do you think?
I don't think they can fit the money. That's the problem. They're about $3 to $4 million under the cap right now, John. They'll get another $10 million come June 1st, but they're going to need that to sign their rookie draft class. They can't take on a salary like $13 million in base.
Yeah, DK gets $13 million this year, which is base.
We're off the hook for signing bonus.
Signing bonus are off the hook. That'd be it. It'd be $13 million. Listen, think about this. $13 million, that's going to be what they pay their entire rookie class this year. 10 draft picks if they pick them all. The rookie pool is like 11-point-something million. And so that's why it's imperative to get guys who can contribute because it's easier to outperform those contracts than it is for DK Metcalf to give you $13 million of production. Now, $13 million for a number one receiver, yeah, it's cheap by today's standards. But he's still got to go out and do it and fit him under your cap. $11 million for 10 players, $13 million for one. And you still got to draft those 10 guys. So it's a hard number to get your mind around. I get it. DK Metcalf might be available even. And if you could do it for like a player, like for somebody like...
Dollars out for dollars in.
Right. It's got to be dollars out for dollars in. So you're talking about a guy for the Buffalo Bills that you would have to get, you know, put on the block. And I'm just going down
probably a pick too.
Like Dawson Knox it'd be $9 million to his $13 million, or Taron Johnson, somebody like that. And that's below that. That's all you're going to get. You're not going to do Josh. Von Miller won't do it. Ed, Dion, Taron, Dawson Knox, Matt Milano would be a comparable contract. So if you get player for player, yeah, but you're talking about these. I mean, we've already kicked to the curb, you know. I mean, Mitch Morris, you know, Bates, Tyrell Dodson, you know, Puna Ford, Sherfield, Gabe Davis, Steph Diggs, all those guys are out the door, and Hayden Poyer too. So all those names have already left. So you're talking about getting rid of a guy like Milano, Knox, Taron Johnson, or somebody like that, and in one-for-one trade, if you could get Seattle to even consider it. That's hard to do. Now, that would be just player for player, and then you still have all your draft picks and all of that. Or you could throw in a five or a six, or they'd throw in a five or a six for you. Because you're giving up a money position. They're giving up a linebacker or a nickel corner or a tight end for the Bills. I'm talking about those levels of contract. So, you know, think long and hard about it. If you get them to say yes, okay, then you got to think, do you want DK Metcalf, a guy you don't know, or do you want to keep a guy like Ed Oliver, Taron Johnson, Dawson Knox, Matt Milano, somebody you love and respect and you've invested in? It's a hard move to make, even for a fan, let alone a GM who's trying to stay dispassionate.
Yeah. Edley on the tweet sheet says, if Murphy and Latu fell, I'd be good with them at pick 28. This is under the auspices of if the Bills do not take a receiver in round one, what would satisfy you? He said, I'd be good with that, but that's really the only two guys who are non-wide receivers that make sense. Good draft, but there's a ton of players that don't have first-round grades at 28. To me, it's either one of those two or a wide receiver or trade back. Maybe Cooper DeJean? Meh.
Right.
Edley is easily disappointed.
And which Murphy is he talking about?
He's talking about Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle from Texas, who I think is going to be a top 20 pick.
Right.
I don't think he's going to be there for the Bills at 28.
Right. Just making sure.
Sean on the tweet sheet says, one or two injuries to the defense, and they can't stop a runny nose. Improve the depth all over the roster. Guys like Hamlin, Jamarcus Ingram, Baylen Spector need to be upgraded. So he wants depth. If they're not taking a receiver one, move back, get some depth pieces. Yeah, I mean, I respect all that. Like I said, they have fortified the depth on the defensive front by adding Austin Johnson, who was a starter for the Chargers. I mean, he's coming in here. He's probably not going to start for the Bills at defensive tackle. He's right behind Ed Oliver and Daquan Jones.
Daquan, yeah.
And then they also added Deshaun Williams and Casey Tuhill, who I think is an underrated, set the edge end. Right. Who also offers you a little pass rush.
And you're right. Now, it's not just for me. It's not just Latu, the edge guy from UCLA, or Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle from Texas. If any of those guys, like Troy Fontenot, J.C. Latham, Jared Verse, any of these guys fall down, you know, snatch them, because they're all up in the top 20s as players. Here's the thing. You go to these big board places where they rank, and this is where it gets all gray. There's not black and white ever in these things. Certainly, everybody's got, you know, Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison Jr., or you've got Marvin Harrison Jr., Caleb Williams, or you've got, you know, whatever. They got these names picked at a different position, but it's an estimate. The big board is every player and who's going to have the best career out of all the guys in this draft class. Who's going to be all pro the most? Who's going to go to the most Pro Bowls? Who's going to be the most important player on their team, whatever position they are? And it turns into a big gray area because it's hard to compare Caleb Williams, quarterback at USC, to Dallas Turner, an edge rusher out of Alabama.
Who's going to be a top 15 pick?
They're both going to be, yes. Caleb Williams, top pick of the draft. On this big board, Dallas Turner's number 7 overall.
He's probably a top 10. He's probably going to the Falcons at 8.
Right. But that's the issue. So that's why, with a straight face, every GM in the league is going to walk out on the day after they draft these guys and say, we got exactly the guy.
We love him.
We love him. Stood out on our board. We had him way high on our board.
Rich on the tweet sheet says the only way he'll be satisfied if the Bills don't take a receiver in round one is by trading back to the early second round and grabbing 2 wide receivers back to back.
Okay.
Boom. Double up. 2 receivers back to back in
Where's
round
the train
two.
Horn? Let me just find.
How about that?
Yes, let me just find the train horn. That's what we really.
While need. You're finding the train horn, Mighty Mouse on the tweet sheet says nothing. Unless they trade out of round one for more picks and can somehow still get a top wide receiver like Leggett in round two and another top wide receiver with the extra round two pick they get for trading back.
Nope. Everybody's, you know. Can you hear that?
Your speaker's on the bottom of your phone.
It's a train horn.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. The train horn. Everybody's on the wide
receiver
train.
Yeah.
Double up!
Patrick on the tweet sheet says, I will not be satisfied if they do not take a receiver in round one. This position has been avoided in the draft for too long. Just get on with it already. Draft one already!
Well, see, there's Patrick, and then there's everybody else saying, remember Sammy Watkins?
Well, right.
We get the entire spectrum.
Both sides of the coin. We're so fortunate.
It's going to be Sammy. We did that with Sammy Watkins. It never works.
We're fortunate. So fortunate here at One Bills Live to get the cornucopia of opinion.
We love them all, too, baby. Just call us. That's fine. We will entertain any theory.
Patrick brings up a valid point. I mean, they have not drafted a receiver in round one in the Bean McDermott era.
What are your opinions then about the Kansas City Chiefs getting rid of the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League, an absolute game wrecker of a wide receiver in Tyreek Hill, and then the next year going and winning the Super Bowl without him? Yeah. How's that work?
Mahomes is pretty good.
So's Josh.
Yeah.
So's Joe Burrow, Lamar, Justin Herbert.
Mahomes might be in a class by himself.
He might be.
Might be.
But, what are you going to do, though? I mean, that's just as likely, if not more likely, than Sammy Watkins happening again or getting a guy that's going to put the Bills over the top. You had Steph Diggs, and he was that guy was the dude.
I get it.
I mean, I know Steph has baggage and stuff he carries, but the guy was on the field. The guy was money, except for that last catch in Kansas City.
Or here.
But that's the way it is, you know? I mean, or against Kansas City.
Yeah.
I mean, none of this is a... You know, none of this is
inexact science.
Chiseled in granite.
We are up against the break here, but Steve and I with some final thoughts from the Tweet Sheet when we return here on One Bills Live. Thoughts on the tweet sheet here as we ask you what would satisfy you in the draft if the Bills don't take a wide receiver in round one. David says, call me crazy, but Cooper DeJean. It's not a pressing need, but wouldn't it be fantastic to have a corner that high a caliber and convert him to safety? Poirier and high type levels could be his floor there, but also wide receiver or we riot. Not really. Jack, meanwhile, on the tweet sheet says, not a darn thing. It's wide receiver or bust. If they hadn't traded Diggs, I'd feel different. But I don't want to waste a year of 17's prime and not add a wide receiver. That would be a mistake. That said, if they trade for a beast wide receiver, I'd amend my thinking. And if they select Chop Maben, I quit. Happy B-Day number 89. Got to give it. I think we struck a nerve today with the question.
Yes,
today, Steve,
I think
the tweet sheets were all-timers today.
They were passionate. thanks for the happy birthday wishes. Chop Maben is an all-timer, too. So
that is an all-timer.
Wow.
We will see you tomorrow at 1. More draft talk for you.